We are live. It's half past. How are we all doing? Just wait for a few people to roll in. Five of you. That's good. Time to crack open. Whoa. Alcohol-free Guinness tonight, folks. I don't know if any of you tried it yet, but it's absolutely awesome. Hi, Chris. Hi, Jane. Very careful procedure, this. There we go. Zero 0% Guinness. Highly recommended. I'll wait for it to settle, actually. Why not? Evening, Ted. Evening, Bob. Nice to see you all online. Yeah, drinking Guinness tonight is pretty apt, really. Because I'm going to be focusing on my years in the tail end of my years in Germany, and then coming back to England, being a solo artist in the early 90s, in 1993, which is probably before most of you are born, of course. So yeah, that's what we're covering tonight. So, but first of all, I'm going to kick off while that Guinness is settling. I'm going to let's move it out of the way. Going to kick off with a song, I think, just to get things going. All right, Duncan. So, had a couple of really good gigs at the weekend. An absolute pleasure to be out there playing live music again. I was in Great Glen on Friday night, and that was really good. It was at the Pug and Greyhound, which is a really nice pub, really lively crowd there. And then the following night I was at Uppingham at the Vaults at their beer festival, playing to lots of people who've been drinking all day. And they're in fine voice as well. And it's an absolute pleasure to be out again gigging. I'm absolutely loving it. I think I said it last week if you tuned in. It's just great to be back after all that horrible pause that we had. So anyway, in honour of playing live all the time and being out on the road again, I'm going to do a song all about that kind of stuff. And this is called Morningless Life. When you stay in, we leave the house. We are animals who come out at night. A card, a lyric, a broken song. I got to keep on moving on. And this is the time when I feel alive. Cause I've been upside down so long. A rock venue, country pub, an open fire, a multi-story car park, and the ripple will be driving me tonight. Seem much clearer on my own. just to listen. Life. That's off the album Angels and Sirens. Good health to you. Probably poured it a little bit too quickly, but there you go. I'm not a barman. Someone did laugh at me hysterically on Facebook the other day when I posted a picture of me having poured one of these Guinnesses really quickly. So, yeah. It's been a long time since I've been able to drink Guinness. It used to be my drink of choice, but obviously I haven't drank in 10 years, and this has only just come out, but it's pretty good. So yeah, it's pretty apt that I'm drinking it, because I'm going to rewind, like I said, back to 1993 when I was living in Germany and I was playing in the Irish pubs with my friend James Sexton. I don't know if he's tuning in tonight. And we were in a duo called Acres Wild, and I was living in a beautiful town called Koblenz, which is where the Rhine meets the Mosel. And I was out there with him. The idea was to for me to move out there and for us to sort of build up a following and you know, be like the Beatles, I guess. But we ended up playing on a big circuit of Irish pubs. Started off in Koblenz, and then it bloomed into other Irish pubs as well. Our friends Russ and Johnny, they were working, well, Russ was certainly, he was working at a pub in Mönchengladbach, so we got some gigs up there as well. And then it just spread, and we did build up a bit of a following, particularly in Koblenz. You know, it was a very exciting time, because we were doing other gigs as well. We're doing a lot of busking in a lot of the towns. We're playing German wine festivals, playing universities, parties, anywhere that we could play. But this stuff was quite predominant, because playing in Irish pubs, not only did we get paid, but the minute we walked through the door, we'd get free Guinness. And I liked Guinness, and I did get rather a taste for it during that time, as you will hear over the next hour or so as I talk about my times towards the tail end of this period. So if you do want to hear all about the Acres Wild story, you can go in onto my website, steviejones.com, and there's a section called Live Streams now, and you can dip in there and you can find the Acres Wild episode, because James has joined me on that, and it was a really good episode, and we went over all the times we had, and we played some songs, a couple of songs that we managed to sort of collaborate again online. But James also managed to hook us up with some really good archive footage from 92, 93 of a full gig. So it gives a real flavour of what we were up to. But I'm going to talk more of the tail end of it tonight. the house that I lived in was in this area called the Cartauser, which was right on the top of the valley, and it overlooked the town of Coblenz. And there was like a long walk for about half an hour, 40 minutes into the town. But we were on the top, and I lived opposite this little college. It was like a small university, and me and Russ and Johnny, my two Irish mates who I got to know through the Irish pub, they actually lived in the halls there. So we'd spend a lot of time in these student halls opposite where I lived, just gate crashing parties, nicking food from parties, beer, you know. It was pretty outrageous, and I could go in there and kind of pretend to be a student and go and eat in a really cheap canteen for about a couple of marks, which is like about a quid, you know. And it was pretty wild. We were just partying the whole time. And there was this really small, there's a couple of really small little bars kind of like in the basements of these university halls, and we used to go in there, and it was just absolutely wild. That's where I met this girl called Carmen, and some of you might know that that's been on the recent album. I wrote a song about her, like, you know, sort of nearly 30 years later, or however long it was. I had a bit of a romance going on there with her, and I met her in the college over the road from where I lived. Me and James are going around the Irish pubs playing all these wild gigs, sort of picking up a bit of a following. But I decided that I wanted to do some more archaeology again, because as many of you know, that was my previous career. And when I moved out to Germany, I actually gave up a job at Northants Archaeology to go and pursue this music with James. But I had been applying for a few jobs over the summer to see what was cropping up, and this job materialised over in former East Germany, in an area called Thüringen, which is absolutely beautiful. And it was working on a Germanic site, and which was, you know, that's as far as the Romans got, was pretty much just before there. So they were trying to find out if the Romans did migrate that far east. So I was working on this site over there, managed to get a job as a supervisor. My German, I should say, wasn't absolutely brilliant. It wasn't fluent. I could get by, but I didn't even know what the German for wheelbarrow was, or shovel, or anything. Don't know how I got the job, but I met with the lady who was the kind of manager of it. She was the director of this site, and it was going to be a small site with about sort of 20 or 30 of us there, with a few students coming in, a few sort of local volunteers. And I met her, and it seemed good. It's like a 5-hour journey from Koblenz by train. But I really wanted to get back into the archaeology again. So that's what I did in that summer of 93. I was spending some months over there. And it was a crazy setup, this site, because the accommodation, it was basically a derelict house next to this recycling plant. I mean, this lady who was the manager had organised it. I don't know what planet she was on, but she'd show, the people would arrive and they go, okay, where's our accommodation for you know, while we're working on the excavation? And she'd direct you to this derelict house that had like no windows, with army beds in it, and we had like a couple of cookers and a fridge in there, and there was a sort of, we could use the shower block that was used by the guys who worked on the recycling plant. There was dust everywhere. So when you've been working out all on site all day, toiling away, you know, mattocking ditches out and shoveling away, you then go back to this derelict house with no windows in it, full of dust. It was crazy. And quite a few people who volunteered, or students, they turned up to go and work there, and they just turned around and went. But this lady, she'd give me instructions in German really quickly about what to do on the site. And, you know, I hadn't had a lot of great supervisor experience by then. I knew how archaeological sites in England, but they had different techniques in Germany. and she would just give me these garbled instructions and then disappear and then come back sort of mid-morning or late morning or even the afternoon, whatever, and just start screaming at me because I hadn't done stuff how she told me and I couldn't understand half of it anyway. And it was just an absolute farce. And but some of the people there were really nice. There were you know, the former East German people were, you know, you've got to realise that the wall had only come down about 3 years before, and so they were just acclimatising to them being part of unified Germany. And they were on site, and a lot of them were singing all these old communist songs that they were taught at school, like when we were working. It was crazy. But they were absolutely lovely. And the town, the nearest town where I was based with this site, was a place called Arnstadt. And it was a beautiful old town, lovely old cobble back streets and things like that. I mean, the scenery was fantastic. And it was famous for where Johann Sebastian Bach grew up, and he started off his musical career there, playing the church organ in the local church. So that was a hell of an experience being there. But at the time, just to give you a bit of background on music, I was in this house and I had a cycle as well. I'd sort of cycle around, and I had some, you know, back then I had, you know, there weren't any CD players around there in 1993, not really. I certainly didn't have, you know, there was no mobile phones where you could connect to Spotify and things like that. But I had a Walkman. The Walkman was my lifesaver. And I remember that summer, the music that I was into at the time, I was really into Hot House Flowers. I'd seen them around that time as well. I think I've been going into that into a previous stream about when I met Dolores from the Cranberries, who was supporting. So I was really into them. I was really into the Waterboys. They released their album Dream Harder, which was out at that time. And New Model Army had released The Love of Hopeless Causes as well, which was a bit of a change in direction for them. 1993, around that time, there was a lot of grunge music kicking around. And I'd seen stuff on MTV, and I must admit, okay, Nirvana, I liked them, but I wasn't a massive fan. But I really took to Pearl Jam, and they made a massive impression on me, the album 10. I used to stick that on the headphones, it just used to really blow me away, really. It really was a very exciting band. They were at the time, they were really crossed over punk and rock with such energy in that way, you know. And I remember seeing the video for Jeremy and Alive on MTV, and it just blew my mind. So I was pretty inspired by Pearl Jam and those bands at the time. And I remember sitting in the kitchen in this derelict house when a few people had gone out. I think I was pretty much left at the weekends to myself because a lot of people went away if I was there at a weekend. So one particular weekend or evening, I wrote this song. I'm going to have a... When I say wrote it... I actually started writing this song in that summer. And it was influenced by Pearl Jam, by some of the vibe that was going on with some of the slower tracks that they had off 10. I'm not really sure what it's about yet, but it was some kind of connection that I had. But this is called The Spark. Where are your power. Where's the ones that we used to know? Where's the love that we thought would grow? Where's the time? Where did it go? Far out there is a spark that we used to hold. So we see the films and we find our songs in poems, in pictures. We read about sea, feel, touch, where we went wrong. Where's the time? Where did it go? Where's the love we thought would grow? Talk me down, 'cause I need to know. Far out there is a spark we used to hold. Spark. Oh, what's going on there? Yeah, the spark. I could say that I wrote that in that derelict house while working on that excavation in Arnstadt. And I didn't actually finish the lyrics off properly until probably late 90s. And you can actually listen to that again if you want. In a section on my website called The Vault, and it's a section of demos from the 90s, and you'll find it on there. You can download it. It links up to Bandcamp anyway. I recorded it later on in Leicester once I finished it off. And I do have songs like that, that the seeds will begin at some point, and I'll file them away, and I won't finish them for decades. Some songs will fall out in a few minutes. Other songs will take years and years. And I never know when I'm going to finish it, you know, when it's like that. But that one needed to be finished, and it was. And I haven't played that in a long time. But yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know. I don't know what I was going through, really. I was... that girl, Carmen, who I was seeing... I've met her at the University over the road from the flat where I lived in Koblenz, and she had a boyfriend who she'd split up with, and we were kind of seeing each other in that gap, and they were very on and off, and when I went off to work on this excavation in that summer, she just disappeared, and I thought she was going to write to me. She didn't. I didn't have a phone number for her or anything like that. And so there's no email or mobile phones back then. I just didn't hear from her. And she promised to me that she'd write to me, and she might even come over, but it just never happened. And I think part of that song, The Spark, is a bit of a... It's trying to work out where I stood with her a little bit, really, at that time. So anyway, that was one thing that was going on. I was travelling back to Germany as well, the western side of Germany, back to Koblenz to go and do gigs over that summer with James. And it was a 5-hour train journey. It was a long way to go back. And we have stuff in the diary that we would we'd honoured, and was going back and doing gigs in various places at the weekends. And we were also trying to get a demo together, and we bought a 4-track, and it became this kind of like, I don't know, this never-ending task. That was a bit of a theme that carried on right until I left there, really. And that we did bits, but we never really sat down and worked on it, and we never seemed to agree on how to do things as well. James is a fantastic musician and very natural at recording stuff. I'm completely opposite. I'm much more spontaneous, and my recording skills were very rudimentary back then. So whenever we tried to record stuff, he got very frustrated with me because I couldn't hit certain notes, and I got frustrated with him because he was being very critical, and it was a real friction that was going on there. But we knew we had to get some kind of demo together. Not just a demo, but we wanted to have a cassette at the time. CDs weren't really a thing, that we could sell at gigs. And it seemed to be a way that, you know, that we could progress. And we could then get the cassette sent to venues to try and get more bigger gigs and better gigs. Ultimately, we wanted to get on bills of festivals and supporting touring bands. But we needed this cassette. And it just... We did have something cobbled together, which I think I have played before, and you can find it in the vault section of Acres Wild as well. But we were never 100% happy with it. So I was travelling all the way back at weekends to do the gigs. I was also hoping that me and James could finish off this demo, but in the meantime, he had he started seeing his now wife Diane. And the problem was that she actually was still based in Glasgow. So he was flying all the way to Glasgow for weekends at a time. Or she'd come back. And they obviously, you know, they were just starting seeing each other. They just wanted to see a lot of each other. So it was very much that sometimes I'd travel all the way back to try and hopefully work on this recording. And he just didn't want to do it, you know, and I'd travel 5 hours on the train. So that caused a real friction there, you know, and it wasn't his fault, you know, and but I got very frustrated because I wanted to really crack on with it. And of course, he was, you know, with Diane, and, you know, he was in that direction. So it was difficult. The flat that I lived in Gablenz, I still kept on to that. And what happened is, in the autumn, I'd had enough of working on this excavation, because this crazy director on that site, she was just a nightmare, and she was just pissing everybody off, and people would turn up to work there, and she'd just offend people or upset them, and she was a nightmare. And it ended up with just me and one other bloke working. Everyone had gone, you know what I mean? It was just mad. And having to live in a derelict house, and it was starting to get cold. It was like getting to October. And I went back, and I caught really bad cold once, and the doctor signed me off. And I just didn't go back, you know. I thought, sod it, you know. The money was good, you know, and the archaeology was good as well. It was very interesting. We found this beautiful old well, I seem to remember. And when we lifted it, it was all made out of wood, and we somehow lifted it out of the ground, and there was film crews there, local TV and stuff. I can't remember too much about the site, because there was crazy German archaeological techniques that I was meant to be doing. But there were some great finds, and it was a real shame. But anyway, I went back to Koblenz that autumn and never went back to Arnstadt. A line was drawn. And I was living in this, the flat that I was in wasn't great. Anyway, I'm going to play another song now. Yeah, grunge type bands were definitely prevalent. Pearl Jam were probably my favourite. Liked Nirvana. There was a film that came out called Singles, which is based in Seattle. Was it Matt Dillon or someone like that was the main guy? And he had all of the bands that broke through. They weren't even that big. I think Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Soundgarden were all in it. And Alice in Chains weren't even that well known at that point. But around that time, there's also a band called the Lemonheads who were kicking around, who I really liked. And I bought a cassette of Come On Feel the Lemonheads. I bought, and this is off it. This is called, I can't remember what it's called now. About Time. I'll play it and I'll remember the title afterwards. Into your arms. I know a place that's deep and warm from the crowd. Into your arms, I can go. And if I should fall, I know I won't be. Sung that in a long time. Done about the high bits there. Into Your Arms, it was called. Come On Feel the Lemonheads. What a great album. Tim Brophy, he often covers that. But the Lemonheads, I love them. That was a cracking album. And I went to a really, really good gig. In Bonn Biscuit Halle. With my friend Marisa, and we were on and off seeing each other as well. So she was a great girl. We were friends more than anything, but we did try and have a kind of relationship thing. But we went along to see the Lemonheads supporting Soul Asylum. I'm wearing a t-shirt tonight, who I absolutely loved. I fell in love with Soul Asylum. And it was a blinding gig. It really, that's one of the best gigs that I've ever been to. Lemons opening up, just being absolutely brilliant. And then Soul Asylum, just rocking the place. Really good. Really, really inspirational. So, with that in mind, I should crack straight on another song. I've got to play some Soul Asylum for you. And of course, most of you will know this song. If you're around in the 90s. But it was a big hit for them. Call you up in the middle of the night, like a firefly without a light. You were there like a blowtorch burning. It was a key that could use a little turning. So tired that I couldn't even sleep. Promise myself I wouldn't weep. One more promise I couldn't keep. One more secret I couldn't keep. Seems no one can help me now. I'm in too deep, there's no way out. This time I have really led myself astray. going back. Wrong way on a one-way track. Seems like I should be getting somewhere. Somehow I'm neither here nor there. Can you tell me, remember how to smile? Somehow make it seem all worthwhile. But how on earth did I get so jaded? When life mystery seems so faded. I can go and no one else can go. And I know, and no one else knows. Here I am, just standing in the rain, with a ticket for a runaway train. And everything is good and right. The day, the night, the earth, the sky. Somehow I just don't believe it. Ticket for a runaway train, like a madman laughing in the rain. Little out of touch, a little insane. Just idiot dealing with the pain. Runaway train, never going back. Wrong way on a one-way track. Runaway train burning in my veins. Runaway, but it always seemed the same. Runaway Train, Soul Asylum. I say that gig blew my mind. That album blew my mind. I mean, the whole album, Grave Dancers Union. I just really could connect with it. There were songs like "Woe Is Me," "I Feel So Homesick," "I Just Need Someone to Shove," you know, about you waiting for a phone call. It just all the songs just hit a nerve with me. They all seemed to be relevant to what was going on. I mean, I was getting really really homesick. I was missing my family, I was missing my friends, I was lonely, I was drinking too much, excessively, you know. I was a bit of a lost soul, really, at that point. And when I saw them and got hold of that album, it just blew my mind, it really did. It's when you have an important album like that, where you can really connect with everything, it is like a companion. It's like having a friend with you, you know, that's on your Walkman or on your stereo. And you know, that kind of stuff is always, music's been so important to me like that. It's been a great support network, and I've always wanted to give that back. You know, I've, you know, in this generation, so many people just have singles or the odd track. The album is, you know, is often not viewed as a thing, but for me, the album, a body of work that is there as a support network, you know, for me, that's been everything my whole life, and I've always wanted to give that back. So anyone who can listen to my music in that way, you know, fair play to you, really. I hope that my work is done, you know. Don't get me wrong, the odd song is individually is great, but it always a body of work for me, you know. That's where it is, and certainly Grave Dancers Union was one of those. There's another album as well I bought at the time called Bang by World Party. And that was another one that was, you know, it's probably both of those that autumn, what I was going through, they were there for me the whole time, you know. what happened is Francisca, who lived in the flat next door, she moved out, and I moved into her flat, and the landlord had kind of let the whole place go, really. I think around that time we found out that he was going to evict us. So he didn't do any work to it. The place was an absolute shithole. It really was. It was awful. It was cold. It was damp. I just didn't really have the incentive to do anything with it because I knew I was going to have to go. So it wasn't good at all. I was drinking too much. In the middle of it all, I was down the Irish pub in Coblenz one night. James was away in Glasgow, one of his trips over there, and I met this girl who was in there. She'd come over from London. Her name was Anouk, a name I'd never heard of before, but she was somewhat like half Iraqi, half Pakistani or something like that. But she was absolutely beautiful. And she got up in the pub and sang, and it was just blew my mind. It was like something out of The Fabulous Baker Boys. Has any of you seen that film with Michelle Pfeiffer where she just suddenly sings and it's just like, just breaks the silence? It was like that. Anyway, we ended up just really hitting it off, and she came back to my flat and she ended up staying for about a week. And she was a busker, basically. She was a real wild card. She was just busking around. She'd split up with a very from a very abusive relationship with this guy. And I think she basically left London to sort of get away from him, and she was travelling on her own. But she was a very intense character. We ended up singing together, hanging out really intensely for a couple of weeks. And we went off and we did some gigs together as well. We managed to cobble together two or three Irish pub gigs in different places. We travelled on trains. And I kind of like fell in love with her, really. I was a bit besotted. And it seemed to be going really well. And then suddenly she just cut me dead. And I remember going to this bar in Trier, I think it was. And by then I'd caught really, really bad flu. I was just a mess. And this bar in Trier, the guy, the main manager there, had a real shine to her. And it was just obvious that she was just going to go with him. So that's what happened. And I was just ended up going back home dying of flu. It was just bloody horrible. It was just like, you know, I couldn't eat or anything. It was just, oh dear. It was just terrible. It was just terrible. I wasn't in a very good state at all. Anyway, what I'm going to do now, we're going to have a little break from me playing and talking. I'm going to play you a track from the Blue Moon Cambridge gig, the Wildfires gig recently. So anyone who tips tonight, you'll get sent this track for free, and you'll also get a 10% off discount. You'll get a discount voucher as well for the store. If you want to buy any merch, let me just show you the merch again. So we have the t-shirts, standard logo, Angels and Sirens t-shirt on the back. We've got the CDs as normal. I can't even see which way I'm going. And we have the wonderful Stratigraphic Heart t-shirt as well. All of these you can order online if you want. But like I say, anyone who tips tonight, you will get a free track, and you're going to get, I will send you this as a download. So I'm going to play you the track Carmen. If I can get it to start. Turn the speakers on, might help. This was recorded at the Blue Moon on the 1st of October, Wildfires.
Thank you so much.
So that's the track Carmen, recorded at the Blue Moon, like I say, 1st of October, the Wildfires. It was a fantastic gig. And every week I'm going to be making a free download available to anyone who tips. You can't get this show anywhere else. So we're not going to be putting it online or anything like that. So nice little bonus for anyone who tips. But it was a great gig, and I'm really glad that we got a recording of it. So, that was Carmen. And it's funny, really, because I only wrote that song kind of just before lockdown, really. I was going for a walk, and suddenly I just started thinking about that, you know. A long time ago, since we sort of haven't had any contact since about 1994. So sometimes people make a big impression on you, don't they? And it was just there in the wind. It was there at the time, and that's how that song came around. And the band do a great version of it, and I can't wait for that to get on the new album. Anyway, I'm going to play another song now. Jackie Wheat. Nice for you to tune in, Jackie. Hey, Jackie, I did get a gig at the Knowles, by the way. Can't remember, it's some point next year, but I will let you know. Thanks for the heads up for that. Thanks to everyone tuning in tonight. Really appreciate you being here with me. I think it is something nice to do on a Monday night. And I've definitely got a different type of audience with the streaming thing than I do at gigs. Not everyone can get to gigs. So it's nice to keep in touch with various people in the digital world. Anyway, I'm going to play you this song and then I'll have a little talk about it. The Doors there for you, my version of it anyway. Yeah, so I was really into the Doors at that point. Jim Morrison was a massive influence on me. And I was 26 at that time. So I could kind of relate, I don't know, relate to, you know, that's the sort of age that he was when he was doing a lot of his music, you know. But there is a link, because also around that time, I'd really hit a massive point of where relationships had gone wrong. I was drinking way too much. Things weren't really working out. And I thought, right, I need to sort my head out. I will go on a holiday. I've got some money I've made from the archaeology, and I will head off into the sun and have a break and do a bit of travelling on my own. And just going to turn that on. I'd never been to Portugal before, so I thought, I know, I'll go to Portugal. And in the mid 80s, in 1986, me and a few others, we decided that what should we do when we were on the dole that summer? Let's hitch to the furthest southwest that we can go. And that's when we went to Land's End. And I had a wonderful summer doing that. So I've always had this sort of connection with travelling as far as you can go. And I decided to do that with Portugal. I thought, I know, if I go to Portugal, I can go to the furthest southwest point of England, of Europe, sorry. So I got a flight and I jumped on a plane to Faro, and then ended up in Lagos. I heard that was nice. And I thought I was all right with travelling on my own. I arrived there, I got myself a room, someone went outside one of the train stations, was like, we have accommodation, pension, you know, and I just went, yeah, okay, I'll come and stay there. I hadn't booked anything. Booked into this room, and thought, right, I'm just going to travel around for a week, get my head together, not drink too much, not get in a state. But what did I do? The first night that I was there, I found this bar called the LA Woman, I think it was called. And it was a Doors-themed bar, hence that song. And I'm going there, and I'm just caning these Long Island iced teas, I seem to remember. And I got absolutely shit-faced. And there was a Scottish guy there, believe it or not. And we nearly had a fight. I'm not a violent guy at all, but he started getting all like, oh, you fucking English and all of this. So I've gone all the way to Portugal to go on holiday, and I ended up getting hammered on my first night, nearly having a fight with a Scottish guy. He couldn't make it up. And that first night, I did meet up with a couple of interesting people, and I remember bumping into them around the town the rest of the week and just saying hello, and I sort of got there with a lot of bravado and confidence and thought this is going to be a great time. And basically all I did for most of the week was just get drunk. Go to bar, and you know, I mean, I always saw myself a bit of a Jack Kerouac type character back then, you know, traveling around, getting drunk, writing bits of poetry, you know. It was all, you know, Charles Bukowski, Jim Morrison, all that kind of stuff, you know. It was all part of the trip was the drinking thing, but at that point it was a real low point, you know. And I think as the week went on in Lagos, and I did travel around different towns and stuff, my confidence in talking to people, to strangers, and making conversation, it just diminished. You know, and a lot of it was the alcohol, because that's what I don't drink now, because it's a depressant, really. You know, when you're really hungover, your anxiety kicks in, the depression kicks in, and that's what happened over that week. So as the week went on, I was more and more depressed. I felt like I didn't want to talk to anybody, spark up friendships with people who I happened to meet in bars. And, it was horrible. It was really horrible. And I reached a real low point, you know, and I thought, what the fuck am I doing with my life? You know, I've got all these fantastic gigs and a great following of fans for what me and James were doing in Koblenz, but his attention is elsewhere. He's on one, he's seeing it one way and I'm seeing it another. And there was a lot of tension between us at that point when we were gigging, you know. It was great, and then it was shit, and it was life was like that at that point. It was either fucking brilliant, I was having the best time of my life, or I was totally depressed and like couldn't leave the house. So there was in Lagos, just wondering what the fuck I was doing with my life. You know, was I going to stay in Germany? I've been given notice on this house. What should I do? And I remember going to this, the most southwest you can go, a place called Sagres, these huge cliffs. Hang on a minute. Yeah, and just sitting on top of these cliffs, wondering what the fuck I was going to do. And it was just one of those points that in my life where I actually looked down and I did actually consider ending it all, really. I mean, this is a horrible thing to say, you know, but I did bring up, I think, once before when I was talking about giving up drinking, but I think many of us have reached that point where, you know, you really push the end of your tether. I was looking across these cliffs and I just thought of my family and all the people that love me, and that's what saved me, you know. It was a defining moment in my life, really, that point, to reach the absolute low point on the edge of these cliffs looking down, and then, you know, not making that decision. I'm going to play you a song now that I wrote about that experience. The seeds of the lyrics, again, happened around that time. I started knocking around my chords, I think, when I got back from Portugal. But this song was kind of completed a couple of years later. And it's all about sitting on the cliffs in Sagres. Get it to work.
Soaked in sunset, looking out to sea. Isolated, beautiful and free. Below the cliff tops, the waves kiss the land. Understand why.
Track Falling, and I recorded it in about 1995, I think, 96 ish. I finished the song later on, so yeah, you can check out that track on Bandcamp or in the vault section of my website. So yeah, I did finish that off a few years later, but that song is all about the experience of being in Portugal at that time, and thinking about some of the lyrics, I think it's a bit of a two meanings to that song, really. Part of it was sort of thinking about Mother Nature actually sort of saving me, and because I was, you know, it's a bit connected to Mother Nature and Mother Earth at the time. I still am in my own way, but also it's a bit of a love song, really, for that girl Anouk, who I had a real thing about, and she just vanished. And I was hoping that I could connect with her again. So it was kind of like two meanings to that song, really. I never heard from Anouk ever again. I think I did write to her once. She might send me a postcard back or something like that. Again, before internet, before social media. It was harder to stay in contact with people. But then things do run their course, don't they, sometimes? And that's certainly what happened. So anyway, I come back from Portugal. I'm not in a good place. I'm going back into this pretty semi-derelict house. Me and James are still doing the gigs. You know, we're still playing Aachen, Mönchengladbach, Koblenz Irish Pub, Cologne. And I'm on the phone thinking, right, let's just crack on with this, you know. Let's get some gigs, you know. We've got some good songs together. We've got a following. We've got a great buzz with what we do. Let's crack on with it. So I was on the phone, phoning up loads of pubs, many Irish pubs, trying to get gigs. And I hate phoning up for gigs. I hate it. I still do. But I was on the phone, phoning up all these bars across whole of Germany, wherever I could find an Irish bar. I booked us a bloody tour, didn't I? I booked us a tour for the following year after Christmas. And we were out solidly for like the whole of January and February. Every weekend we were doing something. It was a lot of hard work. And, you know, and I found a lot of it difficult because a lot of places, yeah, most of them, the people would speak English on the phone, but some of them wouldn't. So I had to make do with my German, which wasn't too bad then at that point. But yeah, James kind of I was doing all the work with that, so for me it was like, I'm doing all the booking here, mate. What are you doing? Oh yeah, you're in Glasgow seeing your missus, you know. And it, so there was a huge tension between us, and I just knew at that point that we were going to fall out, and you know, he's one of my best mates, and it just reached that point that we were having some pretty nasty arguments when we were out at gigs. And I just thought, you know, I don't want to get to a point where it gets really ugly. You know, I mean, really, really ugly. And that was a big fear for me. So at the Christmas time, you hadn't any gigs booked around then. I went back to see the family back in, stay with my mum back in Kettering. And while I was there, I was just drowning my sorrows, and it was the right stay. And I decided that I was not going to stay in Germany. I'd had notice given on the really rundown house. I'd arranged to go and stay kind of house sit at this student guy's house, and that was the only place I was going to live. I had no job. I was just surviving purely on gigs. There was no backup plan. Whereas James had a day job, I had nothing apart from the gigs. So, you know, when I was back home in Kettering, but back in England in Kettering, I just weighed up all my options. And it was a really hard decision for me. I just decided that for my own health, you know, I couldn't go back and carry on doing it. So I decided that I'd just go back, get my stuff and basically leave. I couldn't go through with telling James or really anyone what I was doing. I just thought the best thing to do was just to get my stuff and go. It was just going to be too difficult. And I think I left him a letter or something like that. It was horrible. It was just horrible. I felt terrible. I felt terrible about it. But I had to do it for my own survival. You know, I wasn't going to survive. I was in such a state. I was drinking a ridiculous amount. I was blacking out. You know, people were like, you know, sometimes having to sort of carry him out of a bar because he drank too much, you know. I was in no fit state. So, you know, things had to change. And it was a really, really difficult decision. So, yeah, I think what I'm going to do now, I'm going to wrap it up tonight because I've done just over an hour. This has gone on longer than I thought. So we're going to have a part two to this story. And I shall continue this. I'll finish off with one more song. I think that's probably the best bet. I can find my capo. Where the bloody hell have I put it? Capos and plectrums, where do they bloody go? Here we go. Yeah, so there was a lot to talk about tonight, but you know, it's one of those things. I just wanted to go over it, really. It just shows how I got to certain points with certain songs. And I'm going to finish off with a bit of Counting Crows, because when I come back to England after leaving Germany, this band changed my life. And I discovered their first album, August and Everything After. And so I'm going to finish off tonight with a bit of Counting Crows for you.
From your hotel, baby, I stayed home with my disease. Ain't this position familiar, darling? All monkeys do what they see. Help me stay awake, I'm falling. Down on Virginia and the Loma, where I got friends who care for me. You got an attitude of everything I ever wanted. I had an attitude of need. Help me stay awake, I'm falling. The green apple seeds gonna get me a little oblivion, baby. Try to keep myself away from me. It's 4:30 a.m. on a Tuesday. Doesn't get much worse than this. and buildings in the middle of these lives, which are completely meaningless. Help me stay awake, I'm falling. Sleeping perfect, the buildings, sad green apples. Gonna get me a little oblivion, baby. I'm trying to keep myself awake. Sleeping perfect, the buildings, inside the green apple seed. Gonna get me a little oblivion, baby. Try to keep myself away.
Perfect Blue Buildings by Counting Crows. Thank you very much, all of you, for tuning in tonight. Much appreciated. Stay safe. I've just got over COVID, by the way. I can't remember if I told you that last week. I've lost track of time, but I didn't feel that particularly well until kind of like a couple of days ago, really. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And, hope to catch you next week. Take care.